Hi, welcome to And It's Writing, a podcast where two writers have a few drinks and some laughs while we discuss writing and publishing topics. I'm Amy Avery. I write adult fantasy. At the time of this recording, DC is going to be away for a few episodes. They will be back. But in the meantime, I've got some guests lined up. Today, I'll be talking with my friend Lysia about the miscommunication trope. So could you tell us a little bit more about you and the types of stories that you write?
Hi, I'm Lesia. I write mostly fantasy, but also historical romance at the moment, which is why the miscommunication trope idea came to life. I am not yet published. However, I've been slaving away at my craft for quite a while, and I've gathered a lot of opinions, which I will not hesitate to share.
Yes, especially on this topic. You were the one that did bring up this topic of the miscommunication trope, and I was like, yes, let us share our thoughts. Because I am sure we both have many thoughts. I guess we should first just kind of lay out for our listeners kind of what this is and how it usually plays out, because some people may not read as much romance, and it is most common in romance or romantic subplots.
Indeed, I agree. The miscommunication trope is very well known through not only books but also TV, where you notice two characters fall out over something that the cause of which is an inability to, get things straight in time. And it's very, very common in romance as a kind of like third act downfall for the characters to separate. But you can also see it in a lot of fantasy books as well, where the romance storyline is secondary.
That's true. You can also see it in plot lines that aren't romantic, but I do see it being most prevalent in those. Yeah, and I feel like there's kind of two ways that it plays out, and one of them I like a little better than the other.
Which one's that?
The one that I don't like is when people just don't talk.
Right.
They're just like, I have these feelings, but I'm not going to tell them. I'm mad about this thing, but I'm not going to tell them. The one that works a little better for me is when they do talk, but one of them misinterprets what the other one said. They still should work it out, so it's not perfect, but I like it a little better than when they just don't talk at all.
Absolutely. And I was thinking this as well, that there's a big difference of the reason behind misinterpreting something. And indeed, when a character misunderstands or just doesn't sufficiently explain, it can present a really good opportunity for the author to kind of seed some things in, so like the reader can understand something in context even better than the character in the book. But you see it a lot, like when people read these books and get angry about the miscommunication trope happening because the characters fall out over something that could have been easily prevented by, straight out stating what the problem was. And that's kind of the part that causes so many readers to fall out of love with that, like, plot device. And I think there is a really nice way of incorporating that into writing, and that is when you root these miscommunications in the truth of each of the characters. So the way I think about it is, let's say they fall out over, being uncertain over their feelings. You can see it a lot in romances where the hero pretends to be aloof. And the heroine thinks, oh, he doesn't love me. He doesn't love me anymore. Something has happened. That's a very typical thing. But when you tie it back into, the tragic backstory, so to speak.
The character's wound.
Yes, indeed. When you talk about it that way, suddenly it becomes a little bit nuanced. And also, it gives additional cause for that character to maybe not be as upfront as they otherwise could have. So that way you kind of eliminate that struggle of, not communicating thoroughly, because you will be able to understand as a reader why a character would be hesitant to do so.
And give the character some kind of pre-existing, the word bias is a little strong, but like some pre-existing reason that they would, yeah, interpret something a certain way. Like, their family always behaved this way, or they're coming at it from the perspective of someone who is, from a different culture or something like that, where you kind of, yeah, you understand why they would each approach the same situation with a different lens.
Right. I also think that that's the best way to do it, because when We often in real life also do this when we say one word and the other person completely wildly misunderstands what we were trying to say. So it's such a natural thing that it doesn't make sense to me to entirely cut it out of plots because it's such a magnificent source of tension. Like it's kind of a pity to lose that entirely.
Yeah, I think it all comes down to, yeah, what is authentic for the character? Because I think when it gets most frustrating is when it's like a person who believes the way they do. And for example, if they're a very like outspoken character and then all of a sudden they're not sharing their feelings, you're like, well, that doesn't feel consistent with the character. And that's when you start to see the author's hand going, but we need it for the plot. And I think that's when it gets really frustrating, is when it doesn't feel authentic to the story, and you can tell that it's just there because it's supposed to be there, or we need them to break up, so I guess this is how we're going to do it.
I agree. And it's like one of these examples that you might like, I thought of while I was preparing was, in Twilight, when in the second movie where Edward calls the house and Jacob answers and says they're prepping for a funeral and the whole thing just explodes.
Yeah, it's like you didn't ask who's.
You didn't call back. You were just like, wait a second, let me just off myself real quick, save us all the hassle. Like, what?
And that's the other thing, is it's such a dramatic reaction to the misinterpretation of something that you're like, if you're going to go that dramatic, you almost need the interpretation to be more rock solid than that.
Oh yeah, it's like you have to give them a solid enough base that it's gonna at least come off somewhat reasonable, Like we don't have to convince everybody 100%. Just give us a little bit of an excuse so that we can enjoy the trope. But like another place where I see this a lot, and I watch a lot of K-dramas, and it's really common, and there's like a third love interest that shows up and like tries to like stalk or like nag the heroine, and the hero oversees them, like or overhears them, and he's like, oh, they're involved. I better step away. She's already taken. They usually turn away at the exact moment that the heroine like outright rejects the third guy. It's like literally 1 second away. It's like the miscommunication and the timing are just haywire. And it's just so funny because it's such a repeated structure that when you've seen it like 20 times, you're like, oh, come on, not this again. Please,
Yeah,
God.
the overheard miss, like the overheard wrong snippet out of context of a conversation is another one that it can work, but it's again, they don't communicate afterwards.
No, that's the downfall. Then they don't talk for like a year. Next time they talk, they're like clearing the air and they're like, oh, we have lost a year of our lives. We could have been together so much earlier. Well, duh. It's a beautiful one.
Yeah, and I think it does come into an interesting aspect of the conversation is, like you said, by the 20th time you see it. But then also, especially in category romance, not just stories with romantic subplots, there is usually a common set of like beats. So it's kind of interesting that you're like, as a reader, I don't mean you, like the general you, that readers are, both expecting things that are a little like following a formula, but also getting frustrated when that formula isn't done very well.
That's so true.
And part of that may be because you see it so often that you know what like it looks like when it's most effective and when it's most ineffective.
I think there's also the reason that a lot of romance readers are very voracious and they consume a lot of content. So they become able to differentiate in the execution very well. So they can sense when something is more like authentically presented versus a little bit more manufactured. So I think they just have their like spidey senses going up whenever they see something like that because they want a good journey. They want a good read.
Yeah, they're a little more discerning.
It happens a lot in like romance, especially I notice not necessarily enemies to lovers, but rivals to lovers. The misunderstanding that somebody is like not into you or somebody is mean is also a miscommunication trope in a lot of these cases as well.
Yeah, I think that's true, and I think that's a good one for that one can be done pretty well because the characters are kind of saying one thing and feeling another, but as a reader, you understand why, because of the situation that has gotten them here. So that's a way that I also think the miscommunication trope can be used effectively, is if the characters are not being either honest with themselves or each other. But so it's like they are communicating, but they're not telling the truth.
Right? How often do we do that?
Yes. And that's one, yeah, like I said, that can feel, because of that, feel really authentic. It adds a little bit of conflict, like both internal as well as the external conflict, because it's the characters having to kind of,
Need versus want.
yes, what they need versus what they want, and them realizing those are the same thing. And then that can be when they more effectively communicate afterwards.
Smart writing. I like that. Suddenly the dialogue becomes clearer. I do have a favorite use of the miscommunication trope, and that's, in some plots where you have to have the two characters kind of come apart for, safety reasons almost, when one character wants to save the other from whatever danger is lurking. And they're on purpose, either breaking off things or lying or making themselves not understood in order to navigate that murky territory to keep the other one safe. And that's like my kryptonite. Like it can be.
I love that one. 'Cause yeah, it's like it's just, oh, it's just so juicy.
It's so angsty.
Angst. Yeah, exactly. I love the angst.
Which is my favorite.
Yeah. And that one, yeah, it 100% makes sense.
Right.
So that's why part of the reason that I like it is because, yes, angst, but also because it feels like it flows from the plot and it doesn't feel as contrived, especially if you've really built up the characters up to this point that they would do such a thing.
But there is one thing there that I think you have to be careful with, and that's the reason for them to, execute all of this maneuver has to be strong enough that it can't just be explained away in a very quick manner. Like, when somebody threatens your spouse and you're like, okay, we've divorced, we're no longer together, there's no need for this or whatever. Whoever's threatening them can't just be, like dealt with in a really quick, efficient way because the breakup has to have larger consequences or reasonings. Like, I feel like that balance has to be maintained. Otherwise, you're thinking, why did they go through all of this if they could have resolved it in like 15 minutes?
I think that's a good point about like any time that the trope is used, is that the resolution has to feel, again, realistic and authentic. It can't just be like, oh, okay, the end. Because there are going to be, emotional repercussions afterwards for the characters, and kind of resolving those. I think they do need to be fully resolved, because yeah, if you brush it away, then it also helps make it feel a little more contrived, because you're like, oh, well, that was there for tension, and now it's gone. The end.
You have to have some internal logic and structure in there for that.
Part of that, I think, is the structure of romance, in the fact that you end at the like happiest point in the happily ever after. Usually, sometimes there's an epilogue, sometimes not. So you don't have a whole lot of room if the resolution is resolving that miscommunication for like the aftermath.
That's called a bonus chapter.
Yes. That's the bonus material later. That's for the newsletter.
Yeah, it's curious how these things overlap though with the big fallout, the big dark night of the soul in romance versus where all of these tropes like happen most often, like towards the end. But yeah, in romance especially, like it's really common when the misunderstanding is basically you don't love me anymore, or that kind of stance where the character just says I don't love you or implies that in some way. Like, I've seen that quite a lot, and I feel like that's where you have to be a little bit more careful indeed to base it off in the larger arc of a character in order to pull that kind of revelation or twist off, because it can also feel very repetitive, but also in a romance, they love each other. So you have to really jump through some serious hoops to make this as gut-wrenching as you kind of want it to be by default.
Lean into the angst.
I mean, that's my guidepost always.
Yeah. Well, and I think with this trope, no matter how you execute it, the point is kind of that angst. It's the
Absolutely.
separation and the pining and the both wanting a thing but thinking they can't have it. And so, yeah, I say lean into
Yeah, I
that.
mean, I, for one, tend to write it for the fallout. Some people tend to write it for the reunion. I write it for the juicy bits in between, where everybody's suffering.
Why does this not surprise me?
I don't know, but those scenes are always the most fun because everything is so critical mode.
The emotions are so high.
Yeah, they're just really easy to write without going overboard because this is meant to be overboard. And so, problem solved.
I think that's part of the like joy of the romance genre in general, is the like going overboard is like often the point, and it's great.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, we're starting to come up on time. Do you have any final thoughts that we forgot to mention?
Final thoughts. Just bring the angst, guys, and keep it logical.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's like very concisely what the conversation was about. But do you have anything else you want to share? Any like social media or where we can find you online or any other projects or anything you want to pitch?
At the moment, I don't have anything too active going on, but if you guys feel like it, you can follow me on my Instagram, and that is Lesia Zhukova, which is LesiaJukovA. So you can find me there. I'm always there.
Yay. Thank you for joining me. This is a really fun conversation.
I enjoyed it.
Got out a little venting.
Right? I feel like there's so much venting when you talk about tropes, but I'm kind of into it.
Yeah, me too. Okay, well, thank you, listeners, for joining us, and we will see you again soon.
Bye.
Bye.